Emily, how are you?
Doing good. I'm ready for this themed episode because you can't tell, but I have some fall decorations on my window ledge over
Oh, way cute. Yes. Welcome, listeners, to our Halloween episode. It's officially spooky season, and we're really excited to talk about some Halloween jams. We're gonna get into some spooky Halloween music. We'll be talking about some movie scores. We'll be talking about some music that's not in movies, but that maybe has a similar Halloween vibe. And we're gonna kind of try and discuss what about Halloween music makes it creepy, makes it unnerving for us to listen to. Like, are there qualities that need to be present in music that we would associate with Halloween, and what are those aspects? Also, Emily, do you celebrate Halloween? Does your family do Halloween?
Pretty much. I mean, yeah, this is weird. I feel like this is going to be the first year that I don't, because like I always, well, I mean, when I was younger, I would dress up and everything and like always like go out with my friends, or my family would come over later and we'd like just spend time together and have pizza. Oh, I'm getting all these childhood memories. And then even then, as we got older, then like we'd kind of either my friends or even like my family would go to like haunted houses, which were so much fun. But Halloween's on a Sunday this year. I feel like that's really weird. I don't know.
But like, I don't know, can't you do like a get, what do the young people do? Like get together and do like a fun Halloween party, right? Isn't like college about you dress up and you have Halloween parties instead of like going trick-or-treating?
College is about doing music theory on Halloween night. No, doing Shankarian analysis. That's
Okay, there we go. That's scary. Shankarian
scary.
analysis, that's scary. I love it. I mean, be safe this year, y'all. It's COVID. Be safe. Don't get too crazy out here in these streets. Find a mask that matches your costume. But, I've always really liked Halloween. I love dressing up. I love every excuse to dress up. I honestly feel like that's like one of the founding reasons why I love operas, because it's so dramatic and you get to wear fun costumes and
Oh,
look
that's true.
amazing. And so I love like Halloween makeup and the costumes. I love the movies. I love the music. I had a huge like scary movie phase back when I was doing my undergrad. So yeah, I have a fondness for all of like the fall and winter holidays, because fall and winter are my favorite seasons. Summer's cute, but like I'm always trying to be in the spooky season.
Exactly.
Great. So let's start off with our first piece, which is going to be The Awakening of Jacob from The Shining. And this is by Penderecki, who's a Polish composer. He actually just passed away last year in 2020, I believe.
Yeah, I know. Actually, in my ARTL class last year, like first semester, we had to pick, I forgot what the limitations were, but we had to pick like a particular composer, and we actually picked him. Unfortunately, I literally don't remember anything from that project, but I do know it was interesting because I had knew nothing about him at all. So yeah, I know of him and I know of the movie. I've never seen the movie, so
Oh, you've never seen the. Oh, I
the
do
scene,
like The Shining.
the Here's Johnny scene, like I've seen that.
Okay, great. With Jack Nicholson. I would recommend the movie. I do like The Shining. But yeah, I remember listening to this piece because we listened to some of Penderecki's music in my Theory 4 class. And so I think that might have been before I had seen the movie. And so my first introduction to this music was actually in my theory class. And I remember like this sensation of like, oh my gosh, this is so creepy and interesting. And everyone else just kind of being weirded out, like, why are we talking about this in theory? Or like, I'm never gonna play music like this, so why are we talking about it? But I just remember really being really fascinated, like, oh, how does this music work? Right? Like, what is the beyond? I was a theorist from the beginning. I had no idea. I didn't know until like this year.
There were
But
signs.
it was a sign. Let's listen to a little bit of it and then we can talk about what we're hearing. So this is The Awakening of Jacob from The Shining by Penderecki. Yeah, this piece is so fascinating to me because there's this like sonorism, like this very like binary relationship between the dynamics, right? So it's like soft and then it's building and it's loud, right? Or these timbre differences between like the really low and the really high, right? The really low and then the really like brassy, tinny kind of sound that seems to come out of nowhere, and this huge difference in registers, and then just the way that there's so much like space and time and it's free flowing and you kind of don't know when the next one is gonna be. It's really interesting.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. When I was first listening to it, it was really just waiting for when the next one was gonna be, and like you expect it, yet you don't expect it, because I feel like it's not like it's just like one beat and then the next one comes and like it's totally equal, but it's like so unknown and like it's really just not what your ears are expecting. So yeah, it really did catch my attention, because I think I, out of the group of pieces that we had, I listened to this one like later on, and like I just remember like writing stuff down and I was just like looking at my screen like waiting for the next one, like counting them too. It's funny.
Yeah, there's like built-in tension there because you're not keeping time. You can't expect the next thing. So it's building the tension, especially as you're watching the movie, right? It's like you don't know what's going to pop out at you, and then you don't know when the next crescendo is going to be. And so there are all these kind of unknowns floating. Even, you know, when there's quote-unquote silence, there's a lot of kind of ambient sound in the background. And so it's like this sensation of like, oh, it's silent and there's nothing there, but there kind of is something there and you don't know what it is, and it's farther away, you can't quite hear it. Like it's just giving, it's giving overall this sense of unknowingness, this sense of mystery and like otherworldliness that I think is really interesting. So I remember really, really liking this in class, and the rest of my colleagues were like, a little weird. I don't know why we're talking about this, but I was like, I need to see a score. Like, this is so interesting. No, I just think it's cool. He has 6 pieces overall in The Shining, so his music is like widely, yeah, used in that movie, and it's really cool. He does a stand-up job. So let's go on. We're gonna listen to Jaws by John Williams. Again, this has like such a big reputation for being really creepy, although the main motive is so simple, is that it's like immediately recognizable. It's kind of unlike anything that you have ever heard and we would immediately associate it with this movie and with horror in general. So it's just brilliant. So we're
gonna, before you ask, no, I have not seen the full Jaws movie either.
You haven't seen Jaws?
I've seen clips of like the da da da, you know, like where the shark comes, but I have not seen anything like other than that.
All right, listeners, we're gonna start the GoFundMe because clearly Emily doesn't have a Netflix. She doesn't have Hulu. She doesn't have HBO Max. We need to do something. We need to send her the DVDs. So you know, fill your carts now on Amazon and send it to P.O. Box. What if we got a P.O. Box and people could send
it? Oh my gosh.
So let us listen to the main theme from Jaws by John Williams. So much to say there. It's so fascinating. I mean, first things first, we truly stan a composer who knows what they're doing with the percussion. I'm gonna say it again for the people in the back. Stan a composer who knows what they're doing with the percussion, because when the timpani hits, it is so... When there's timpani in anything, you're just asking for the drama. Like, it really ups the ante by like 20 times. And it's so good. And the cymbal rolls, like, it's just so, it's such an evocative instrument that as soon as you include it, everything is like 50 times as dramatic. So he knew what he was doing there. It's amazing. And again, like, the two note motive is so simple, but it's so universal, right? You can sing it. You automatically see the scene in your head. Like, you know what to associate it with, and you associate it with horror. Even if you don't have all of the, right? Like, just being able to say, da-na, da-na, and you don't even need all the other, like, you know, the higher parts that come into it. Like, you already know what that signifies. It's genius marketing. Okay, we had PR people who were on this. It's so good. I love it. What do you think?
Yeah, I just find it funny. Yeah, that all you need is like just that half step, and then to increase the tempo, and like immediately it's like terror that you feel. And I find it funny that my junior high orchestra director would teach us like our low twos on the fingerboard or something, like our half steps, by talking about Jaws. And that's like how we like learned. She would like reference that all the time, and like, and she would play it. She's like, what does it sound like? Da, da. And I was like, Jaws. So yeah, it's funny.
That's so, see, so people who haven't even seen it, like, already know what it signifies. And there's so much inherent tension in the half step, right? We think of like, we think of mi to fa, right? Like the half step relationship there having tension, and then from T to Do having tension, right? And that's why there are so many rules in music theory and in voice leading about resolving your sevenths and, you know, things like that, because the half step as an interval carries so much weight and inherent tension. So building a whole theme around that relationship, it is extraordinary. It's really, really... Yeah. Interesting and unique, and I love it. And of course, you know, there's all the growing and dynamics, there's like the doubling of the bass. I wonder, you know, what is the greater and more common signifier of like doom and gloom in music? Is it really, really, really low bass notes, or is it higher notes, right? So my mind tends to go to like lower notes being more ominous, right? Mm-hmm. Inspiring more fear. So the fact that you're really starting off the piece right with this dunna, and it's in a lower octave versus being dunna higher, right? Yeah. Versus it being, you know, in the piano or something like that, right? And that you have this like these lower bass notes that are just like bum bum bum, right? And then they pick it up, and it's double time, and you're like, oh, it, you already know that something's happening, even if you haven't seen the movie, right? Even if you've never seen a scene in the movie, you know that something really dramatic is happening. So it just does such a great job of like setting everything up, and it feels so thrilling. It truly does feel scary. I love it.
Yeah. Or like even how you say, like, I would agree too that like the lower notes are what would like I'd associate like horror with. But then if you combine like the lower notes and then like even like the like screeching high notes, I mm-hmm. that's even more of like the high point, which is interesting. It's more of like the texture of the high notes that determine if it's horror or not. But the low notes are like always, almost always horror.
That's interesting. I'm trying to think of musical examples maybe that have like higher notes that signify like screams or something like that, moans. Like, yeah. I'm sure it can be. But I don't know. If I was going to try and write a piece, which remember when I almost failed my composition class? I remember. But if I was going to try and write a piece and the prompt was to write something, write like some, you know, 16 bars of something that you would see in a horror movie, I'd probably want to start on the low end. So maybe that's just a personal bias that I have or an association that I make, or is that something, again, that's kind of been embedded in the listener? I don't know.
Research project number two.
There we go. Listeners, I'm trying to read your work, please. Somebody write. You know what? I actually went on MTO, Music Theory Online, the online publication by SMT, and I went and I did Command F trying to search for John Williams. There is not an article about John Williams. And I was like, really? I was surprised by that. I was surprised by that. I didn't see anything. Like, since, you know, how long has MTO been a thing? Since the 90s? So I was surprised that we've had MTO for 20 years and no one has written about John Williams. Listeners, where's the dissertation? I'm trying to read it. Send it to us. I'm sure there's something out there and I can keep searching for it. But listeners, if you're listening and you're like, that's because I wrote it, send it to us. Okay, great. So we're gonna finish up with, so this is not a piece in a movie score, but it's something that, again, I remember listening to in my Theory 4 class in my sequence during my undergrad. And this is a piece that a bunch of my friends thought was super strange and creepy. And I didn't feel that way. So I wanted to listen to it and get your opinion on it. Because all my friends are like, ooh, this should be in a spooky score. And I'm like, should it? I kind of think that it's just like normal and cool, but I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Yes, I wanted to get your thoughts on it. I think it's probably because I'm so fascinated. Well, let me not say too much. We need to listen to it. So cliffhanger for the listeners. So we are going to listen to Ancient Voices of Children by George Crumb. Okay, so we'll stop it there. So.
I got chills again. The beginning.
Okay, wait, why?
Because it's creepy. Especially with like the, I mean, I know not all like the recordings have like that staticky thing in it, but that did put some like the fire crackle, you know, like that's the thing. That did also feel like some like, I don't know, a creepiness into me. But I was gonna say, I think like this piece is like a good example of how like the silence is just as important as the notes, because like in between, right before like the big leaps and like the high notes, like it's like you're kind of like before, kind of like you're waiting for it. And what else are you say? Oh, we didn't get to it, but at the very end when they have like the whispering and stuff, that really creeps me out.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I remember listening to this during class and I was so fascinated by just kind of the extended singing techniques that because you start off right off the bat with this like, oy, 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 and you're like, wait. For me, it was like, stop everything. Like, I need to see the score. I'm so interested before the creep factor set in, because I was too busy being like, I want to sing something like this. And I'm wondering if it's like the fact that for so much of it is like solo soprano, is there something creepy about that? Is it the specific intervals, right? Is it the fact that we don't really seem to have like a home key? And it's just kind of wandering. Is that what is so unnerving to us? Because I'm like trying to pinpoint why people find this so, you know, creepy. Because I just never really saw it that way. And I never really saw George Crumb's music that way. But that's because I'm like a stan. So maybe, right? So I don't know if it's my own bias kind of clouding what other people are perceiving about this piece to be unnerving. I don't know. Maybe it's the intervals, right? And the fact that it's so, like you said, the fact that you're kind of waiting for the next line, that it's all this kind of free-flowing time, or seems to be, to where, you know, so much of classical music is about like subverting the listener's expectations. But in this instance, we don't even know what to expect in order for them to be usurped. So it's like, I don't know. It makes for such a unique listening experience. And I really like George Crumb's music for that. I wanted to show you, because also a big part of this piece for me was like, this was one of the first times that I was introduced to like a graphic notation score. So I'm going to show Emily the score. Sorry, this might not make for good audio content for the listener. Sorry, but we're going to look at the score and maybe Emily can describe what she's seeing here, because I just think it's so interesting. So let's zoom in a bit here. Can you see it?
Yeah. Oh my God.
Okay, if you want to describe for the listener a bit what this looks like.
Chaos.
why is it chaos? Like, what makes it different from like a normal score?
It's not in a straight line. The notes are just jumping everywhere. The rhythms are quite unusual. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not just super easy to follow like a normal score, I feel like.
Yeah, so if you can see, there's like the soprano line on the top that starts, and then we have the second line is where other instruments are introduced, but their part of the score is missing if they're not playing. So your eye is like wandering all over the score to like, okay, who's playing right now? And it's just really interesting. So I remember seeing this. I'm going to show you another screenshot. Okay, so here's another one from the same piece. So it's just like the score, the notes are all over the place. When the soprano is speaking, then you know it goes down to like a single line, but the note values when the soprano is speaking are not all on that line. Like, there are still kind of parameters about the register in which you should be speaking in, which I think is so interesting. So like every part of what everyone is doing is planned. And then there's this circle in the middle of the score, and in the middle it's Dance of the Sacred Life Cycle. So it's just like, what's happening? This is a score that I'm really interested in like looking into and analyzing, right? In figuring out why a composer would structure it in this way and what it's supposed to communicate to the performers, right? That's a very intentional choice. And when we see music that you know, is hundreds of years old and has multiple editions, right? People kind of put their flavor on it. People might put in, you know, phrase markings or dynamic markings when the original composer didn't, because they're making assumptions about what the composer would have wanted. Heyo. But you know, here it's kind of like George Crumb has really put everything in the score, and again organized it in this way that, you know, upon first glance seems pretty intimidating. But, you know, as you get into it as a performer, it reveals so much more about his intentions and about what you're supposed to do. Like, I feel like you develop a stronger relationship to Crumb himself versus having a relationship to the score, if that makes sense. I don't know. I just find it it's so interesting. Yes. Anything else about this piece?
I don't think so. I mean, it was obviously my first time listening to it, so it was totally brand new to me. Really interesting. Yeah, I'm hoping, I mean, right now all I'm learning about is Baroque music, so I'm excited to get into some, like, interesting, but some different, you know, material like this in the future.
So. Yeah, I think it's always, you know, a worthwhile experience. And again, it's ideally the job of the university to introduce students to a wide variety of music. Now, people have very different views about what wide is. I would hope that students would be exposed to as much music as possible in a way that isn't harmful or like appropriating or not giving proper credit to its origins. And yeah, I can't wait for your 3 or 4 experience. We're going to talk about it on the podcast. Come back in April, listeners. All right, so that is going to do it for this episode of The Theory Club. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. If you have any questions, comments, if you want to be on the podcast, if there's something you want us to listen to or read, you know where to send it, thetheoryclubpodcast@gmail.com. We really want to hear from you. I'm trying to read some Phantom of the Opera research, so send it in so that we can look at it and listen to it. And yeah, thank you so much for rocking with us. Follow us on the Instagram, and we hope you have a spooky Halloween. We love you. Be well, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.
I think I'm going to change, I'll change the theme song for this episode.
Ooh.
We're going to do who did Toccata? Not me not knowing. Sacrilegious.
Oh, Bach.
Okay, is it Bach?
Yeah.
Okay. Damn. Okay, wait, let me.
Blooper in the end.